Allard Brown Gort, Associate Director of Notre Dame's Institute for Latino Studies, discussed immigration policy considerations with Bill Schmidt of the Office of Public Affairs. Their conversation referred to readings assigned for this online course, exploring how to bring various perspectives together and build consensus.
So thank you, Professor, for meeting with us today to talk about these readings.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Much of the work of the first 3 weeks of this course has dealt with each individual's personal task of educating ourselves to make judgments about the very complex subject of immigration. The lens of the economist and the lens of Catholic social teaching have been two perspectives we've used in asking questions like who's gaining, who's losing, what's fair, what's unfair. What do you think of this kind of warm-up for the debate? Have we become stalemated in polemics, and are there ways to actually start solving these problems?
Well, I think, first of all, the approach taken is a good one, because it is a complex situation that needs complex thought. It is a situation, moreover, where so many people arrive at the debate already knowing the answers, because there are two issues when we're talking about immigration. One is whatever economic issue it is that we're discussing, economic effects and so on and so forth. But the other is really much more complicated and much more difficult to talk about, because it really has to do with social issues. One of the things that has happened, I think, in immigration over the past 20 years is certainly since the entrance of NAFTA, since the beginning of NAFTA, we can see that the economy of Mexico, the United States, and Canada are becoming much more integrated, more and more integrated. And yet, one of the problems with NAFTA is that while we say that we can move different units of production around the borders without any problem, in other words, capital and technology, mm-hmm. we cannot move people. Mm-hmm. In some way or another, what we're seeing, I think, with immigration is that eventual integration of all three economies. Nevertheless, one of the things that we can say is that money maybe travels borders easily because, as they say, money has no smell. It's not that immigrants have smell, but their cooking does. And these are the issues that we're confronted with. We're confronted with people being faced with new situations, being faced with a new population that speak a different language, that eat different foods. And all of this is happening at a time when there is a great deal of economic dislocation in the United States. So people feel uncomfortable, and this is an easy target for their discomfort. Nevertheless, I think the good thing about the approach that has been taken in the previous weeks is that we are starting to look at it across disciplines. And really, as we look at immigration, we really have to think not only economically, we not only need to think in moral terms, I think that is extremely important, but we also have to look at issues sociologically, we have to look at it demographically, we have to look at it use a variety of different lenses to try and gain a more complete understanding about what is really going on. Not only what is going on now, what is the history in this country of immigration, of integration, of assimilation, but also what is the future of this country? And what does this immigration wave mean, this current immigration wave mean for the future of this country?
Very good.
Did that answer it?
Yes, that's good.
Okay.
Now, one classic example of a myth that gets tossed around simplistically is that immigrants from Mexico only fill the jobs that U.S. citizens won't take. Marshall debunks this in his article. The fact that this myth persists and that it helps to confuse the debate Do these tell us something about how complicated it will be for Americans to make policies addressing immigration rationally and comprehensively?
I guess I would start from the following. I am not sure that, to me, Ray Marshall really debunks that myth. He makes some very good points about the strength of networks and the power of networks. And yet sometimes when he talks about this magnetic attraction between the immigrant workforce and the employers, he really slips into some sort of mysticism. One of the things that I would say is, but having said so, it is important to understand that what he is saying has some power. And it is important to understand, therefore, that there are myths around immigration on any side of the issue, both those that are against immigration and those that are for immigration. I think the issue about, specifically the issue about the work that Americans won't take, is an important one, because one of the things, as Borges points out, is what happens to those with less than high school education in the United States. We ourselves have different studies that show that, for example, first-generation Mexican immigrants in Chicago do much better than second- or third-generation Mexican-Americans in Chicago with similar levels of education. Part of that has to do with the psychology, I think, of the individual, because the immigrants that came in, for them, it's not strange not to have a high school education. Most of the people in their village didn't, and so, you know, you just get on with it. Partly it has to do with the sociological issues of the culture of poverty, the falling into gangs, that sort of thing, social pathologies that occur in this country. But nevertheless, I think that one of the things that is true about immigration is that as we look at it, we have to understand that the vast majority of integration is both much more educated and much less educated than the general American public. Having said that, I think one of the fallacies that we fall into is that saying that immigrants from Latin America tend to be less skilled. The fallacy there is that we are conflating or that we are equating skill with educational attainment. While there is no doubt that educational attainment makes certain operations much more simple or much easier to train somebody to do something, we have a lot of people that come in with a lot of skills that this country needs that are just no longer produced in this country. In Mexico, for example, to become a precision tool and die maker, you don't typically go to school. What you do is you start off going at 16, working in a factory, and you get trained on the job. If you look at the number of precision tool and die makers in the United States, if you look at the number of if you look at precision tool and die makers in this area, you will notice that most of them have an average age of around 60. Where are we going to get those people? There are relatively few technical training programs. I mean, this is a problem with training in this country, in which what is privileged is going through high school, then going to college, and then going on to other things. But one of the things that we've forgotten about is industrial education. Yeah. Many immigrants come with on-the-job industrial education. So one of the things that we cannot do is we cannot say that just because somebody doesn't have a high school degree that they are quote-unquote unskilled. So one of the things that we need to do is sort of understand better what it means when we talk about skills or not skills. The other thing that I would say about that is that, in this sense, I think Borges has it right. There are many businesses in the United States that continue to exist marginally because they are, as he says it, because they're paying substandard wages. I'm not sure that we can talk about substandard wages as the only reason that some businesses are marginal. Some businesses are marginal because U.S. society no longer produces certain types of workers. Mm-hmm. An example of this would be, for example, the hardwood lumber industry in the Northeast. In Maine, they have a problem with finding lumberjacks, and the reason why is because the way the business works is it means being out in the back of beyond for over a week stuck in trailers with 12 of your closest friends. The industry used to rely on farm boys to staff, right, to be lumberjacks. One of the things that this society is no longer producing is farm boys, because they're either farmers slash businessmen, or they've gone to the big city and gotten a job elsewhere. They say that they try to hire people from the inner city, but they are not used to getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and they're certainly not used to being out in the middle of nowhere for 2 weeks at a time, and then coming in for 4 days into town and then going back out for another 2 weeks. So one of the things that we see is that, and we hear this in the, for example, in the big raids on the disassembly plants or the big slaughterhouse, we hear that there were Americans lined up to take the jobs. What we don't often hear, though, is that their rate of turnover is much, much higher than these immigrants because they are not used to working these sorts of jobs. So one of the things we need to ask ourselves is, yes, there are some companies that probably should not be in operation anymore in this country because the society has not produced the type of workers that are needed. On the other hand, one of the questions we need to ask ourselves is, for example, are we ready to do without restaurants? Who works in restaurants? Young people work in restaurants. There are very few young people nowadays compared to what there were 20, 30 years ago. It's just part of the demographic shift. And there are just very, very few people, young people, compared to what there were 20, 30 years ago. It's just part of that demographic shift. And at the same time, our society has evolved in such a way where restaurants occupy a larger part of our lives. We go out to eat a lot more than, for example, our parents did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So so one of the things that we have to do is we're looking at the question of immigration is we need to be able to look at this from a variety of different angles. And we need to be able to try and separate the real facts from the emotion that this subject naturally carries.
And it sounds like there is a reason to be hopeful that getting into some of these specific issues does create room for common ground for a sense of a win-win solutions that the usual polemical debate on immigration that we might hear on the radio talk shows or whatever just never seems to encourage. But you're pointing out that the United States economy has certain needs and flaws and a need for some of the strengths that immigration really brings to it.
Correct, and I think that it is, the bottom line is, I think, there is a lot of right on both sides of the debate. I think that people who talk about the necessity to maintain the rule of law are absolutely correct. This is something that is very important in the society. This is something that is very important in the national psyche. I think a lot of people who talk about the effect on the less skilled in this country, particularly African American youth, and also some Latino youth, right? I think they're the ones that compete head to head. And I think that, there are some things to be concerned about. I think that we need to be concerned when somebody, when an economist says flippantly, well, it's only 3% or 6% of the salary of the lowest tier, you have to think the 3 or 6% of $12,000, $15,000 is a lot of money. It's a lot of money to them,
yeah.
Right? It's right. Not, it may not be a lot of money to us. So this is something that clearly we have to be concerned about. And yet, we have to recognize that if we want to keep living in the style to which we have become accustomed, that immigration does bring certain benefits. We have to think not only in what is happening today, but we have to think about what is going to be happening 20 years from now when the majority of the baby boomers are retiring. Who is going to be doing the jobs that are going to maintain those baby boomers in the style to which they would like to be retired? I know that I would like my 4.5 or 3.5 workers to be making good money and paying good taxes. And I know that if the workforce falls to 2.5 workers, that's not going to really be able to provide me with a good retirement. In fact, this is something that Japan, Germany, Italy, most of Europe is facing. The United States is not facing it because not only the immigrants, but more importantly, their children. Because immigrants tend to have a higher birth rate, but so their children are going to be able to help us out 20 years down the line. So this is these are things that we need to be thinking about. Ultimately, though, I think what it comes down to is trying to have a decent argument, understanding that just because you're if you're anti-immigration, you're not necessarily a racist, you're not necessarily a xenophobe. There are very good positions to be taken and serious and valid concerns. Neither are you necessarily for the breakdown of the rule of law if you are for immigration. I think what we need to be striving for is what Ray Marshall identified, which is a good law, one that is fair, one that is transparent, one that is enforceable. Because right now what we have is we have a law that is on the par with prohibition, a laudable law, something that is very, very good. But really, if people were not ready to stop drinking, it was going to cause many, many more problems because the penalty for breaking the law was nowhere near the benefits of breaking it. This leads to a mindset that does lead to the breakdown of law, of the rule of law.
Very helpful. Adds a lot of interesting context to the whole issue, which is what, of course, we hope the entire Notre Dame Forum and the Notre Dame Forum process adds to the debate. Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you.
This has been a Notre Dame Forum podcast. For more, visit the forum online at forum.nd.edu.